but the stake for it. As of yet, no one has invented a time machine to go back and correct past ignorance. But usually, that's exactly what it is, ignorance rather than hatred. The important thing is that you can change who you are and how you act today, and this is something I am working on every second. Allow yourselves to evolve. We're only human after all, and we're all guilty of making mistakes. I'm learning that if you want to better the world, start with yourself and set an example. I've also learned that positivity is contagious and that it's ridiculously difficult to bitch with a person who's just not joining in. I've given up bad habits and I've taken up a hell of a lot of good ones. I try to challenge and question myself every day and spread love as much as possible. I may not be able to give everyone in the world money, but I can definitely pay people a compliment. I love saying really loudly, "Oh my God, I love that girl's outfit," as people walk by me. I love smiling at strangers. I love tweeting positive vibes. I've cut out a lot of hate-fueling websites, and I'm sorry, but I've had to unfollow or at least mute anyone who's consistently negative. I try to spread love, and I try to be as educated as I can be. But, guys, all I can do is try my best. But trust me, it's a great feeling knowing I'm doing all I can, and it's something I encourage you to do too. I've recently come to learn a bit about intersectional feminism. The word intersectionality was coined by American civil rights advocate and law professor Kimberly Crenshaw in 1989. Crenshaw recognized that society often treated issues of race and gender as though they were mutually exclusive, when really, that shouldn't be the case. As we know, people are oppressed for a multitude of reasons, including gender, race, sexuality, class, ability, and other variables that can impact on our individual experiences of life. If an individual or individuals are a crossroad of these intersectional systems of society, they are likely to be victims of greater bias and oppression. For instance, I am a woman who is in a same-sex relationship, so I suffer from inequality due to my gender and due to my sexual orientation. However, in society, I have benefited by being a cisgender person who is white and able-bodied. It's extremely important to realize that although feminism strives for equality for all people, we must recognize that some people are born with more privilege than others. When discussing feminism, it is important to bear in mind that what works for one person may not work for others, and that we should not only check our own privilege, but also acknowledge the privilege, or lack thereof, in others. A person who not only did this, but did it well, is Emma Watson. She addressed her white privilege in a letter to her book club. She wrote, "When I gave my UN speech in 2015, so much of what I said was about the idea that being a feminist is simple, easy, no problem. I have since learned that being a feminist is more than a single choice or decision. It is an interrogation of self. When I heard myself being called a white feminist, I didn't understand. I suppose I proved their case in point. What was the need to define me, or anyone else for that matter, as a feminist by race? What did this mean? Was I being called racist? Was the feminist movement more fractured than I had understood? I began panicking. It would have been more useful to spend the time asking myself questions like, what are the ways I have benefited from being white? In what ways do I support and uphold a system that is structurally racist? How do my race, class, and gender affect my perspective? There seem to be many types of feminist and feminism, but instead of seeing these differences as divisive, I could have asked whether defining them was actually empowering and bringing about better understanding. But I didn't know to ask these questions. I recently read up on the way the internet is designed, specifically social media. Using similar techniques to gambling websites, social platforms want you to spend as long as possible browsing and will do everything in their power to stop you from clicking off onto another site or, God forbid, turning off your device. A 2013 study from Beihang University in Beijing of a Twitter-like site called Weibo found that anger was the emotion that spread the most quickly over social media. Although joy came in second, it was analysed that outrage was rewarded with far more traction, as people preferred to share joy with intimate friends and peers, whereas with outrage, people were more likely to join in with strangers. When it comes to outrage, people are seeking validation for their opinion, be that through likes and comments or shares and retweets. There are also multiple studies on people's addiction to social media, as receiving a comment or like gives a rush of dopamine, similarly to what happens when you smoke a cigarette or drink alcohol. Now, I am in no way hating on the very platform that gave me my career. I love the internet. I love that you can make friends, interact with people, make videos, share stories, share jokes, and just generally enjoy all the positives that come with staying connected. But nothing in the world is without its downsides, and I do believe that the negatives of social media need to be addressed. If outrage and quick reactive assumptions are being passed on from one stranger to another, I don't think that's altogether progressive. I believe there are times when we need to breathe, step away, and recenter ourselves. It can be so easy to get swept away by fear-mongering, sensationalist headlines, or to become upset by something before you've heard the full story. It's time to stop tearing each other apart and start building each other up. And this is what I have learned from an intersectional approach to feminism, that compassion, empathy, and an understanding for others is key. Before we jump to conclusions, let's remind each other that the world isn't actually that bad a place and that generally, people are wonderful.
Rosie, what a highly articulate argument. You must have heard it from a man. Well done for reiterating it so skillfully. And I'm in total agreement with you. Emma Watson's a babe. But that's not all she is and should never be valued for her physical attributes alone. It's so important for women to support other women. We are powerful alone, but together, we're a force to be reckoned with. Like when ants come together and carry objects a zillion times their own weight. That's us women, carrying men towards each and every one of their successes. Now, in fear of any of you ever feeling discriminated against as women by men, I've made a quick guide on what not to stand for. Follow these rules and you can't go wrong. Remember, I'm an influencer. I know what I'm talking about. How to combat everyday sexism. Never let a man hold the door open for you. How dare you assume I'm too physically pathetic to hold the weight of a door, you pig-ignorant bastard. Never let a man compliment you. Oh, you think I'm insecure and need complimenting to survive my day? You inconsiderate prick. Never allow a man to let women and children go first. Oh, you think because I'm a woman my chances of survival are less than yours? Let's see, shall we? Don't ever let them get the bill. Oh, you think I can't afford it, do you? That's not chivalry. That's boasting about the gender pay gap. Don't stand for it. Do not let them stand up for you. You do not need them to fight your battles. Never allow a man to be honest with you. They assume you can't play games because you're incapable of handling manipulation. Not the case.
Of course, we are all guilty of certain misconceptions, judgments, and stereotypes. We even hold ourselves up to impossible standards. How many of us want to be a certain weight or fit the mold of a certain classification of beauty? I had a female friend who turned to me once and told me that there are no funny female comedians because women can't be funny. I was shocked, but the only person she was limiting was herself. That's what we do when we decide to live by the rules and believe that we can only act, think, or look a certain way. But no one ever made history by following the rules. There are a lot of women out there who I see talking the talk but not actually walking the walk. Women who spout a load of spiel about supporting other women, but what are they actually doing themselves? Ladies, let's all try harder. First things first, we've got to stop bitching about one another. Don't reduce another woman or person to their looks alone. Society already plays women off against each other with who is sexier and who wore it better. Newsflash, they both look great. Besides, we're more than just objects to be lusted over, and we're smart enough to know this already. Help each other out and talk about pay. A lot of the female YouTubers in my field discuss pay with one another, not to gloat or flaunt, but to check that we are being paid fairly and equally and are not being ripped off. We offer each other advice and introduce our friends to people who might be beneficial to their careers. Why? Because teamwork makes the dream work, ladies. When another woman is successful, we should celebrate it. The more successful women out there, the more opportunities we all get.
I'm really proud of what Rosie and I have achieved as women. Don't get me wrong, we've slept our way to the top, but that doesn't mean we haven't had our hurdles. We've had a lot on our side, there's no denying it. We're far from the biggest success story on the internet, but two LGBT women trying to make it in comedy isn't as easy as it might look. Especially when only one of us is funny. Funny or talented women in Hollywood, who might not necessarily adhere to the rigid, somewhat archaic standards of Hollywood appeal, inspire me to believe that you can achieve whatever you want to achieve as long as you're passionate, you're talented, and you're driven, regardless of your age, race, shape, or gender. Kristen Wiig, Rebel Wilson, Whoopi Goldberg, Ellen Page, Jennifer Hudson, and Kristen Stewart have all encouraged me to be motivated. Women are doing it. Women are making waves, rejecting norms, and speaking out. And here's how a few of them are doing it.
Evan Rachel Wood has had a profound impact on me recently. From wearing suits on the red carpet in order to challenge gender stereotypes and show girls that they can wear whatever they like, to speaking in front of Congress about her rapes and sexual assault. She's a feminist, a bisexual, and an incredible actress. I like the way she uses her platform and social media accounts to spread positive messages. She doesn't argue with people online, but still firmly promotes feminism and speaks openly about overcoming her past trauma. I find her extremely down-to-earth, relatable, and talented. Reese Witherspoon has been a hero of mine since Legally Blonde. The character Elle Woods showed me that I could be smart, ballsy, interesting, and be taken seriously while still being extremely feminine and obsessed with pink and sparkles. Since then, Reese has gone on to create her production company, Pacific Standard, with the aim of seeing different, dynamic women on film. She said, "I was talking to my girlfriends who are actresses, and we were like, there's nothing out there, they're really not making anything for us. So I thought, well then, I'll start a company, self-funded, and I'll start developing roles for women. I'm really proud." I admire Reese for her do-it-yourself attitude, and I think it's amazing how she noticed a gap in the market and set out to fill it herself. As well as Pacific Standard, she has also created Hello Sunshine, a digital media company dedicated to telling female-driven stories across all platforms. Reese spoke about how she felt a responsibility for all the women in the world to create more opportunities for women, and that is something I truly commend. Serena Williams. As well as her obvious physical talent and dedication, I admire Serena's strong attitude. She says, "For every negative comment, there's a million good comments. I always say, not everyone's going to like the way I look. Everyone has different types. If we all like the same thing, it would make the world a really boring place. What matters most is that I like myself." Serena has been criticized about her physical appearance, with people even telling her she needs to pluck her eyebrows. She says of the comments, "Too muscly and too masculine," and then a week later, "Too racy and too sexy. So for me, it was just really a big joke." Serena has praised the power of looking and being different and says that, "Since I don't look like every other girl, it takes a while to be okay with that. To be different, but different is good."
With these powerful women in mind, I've decided to articulate some advice for men. I think it's extremely well-balanced, neither combative nor quarrelsome, and will prove instrumental in dissolving sexism. The world is changing. I truly believe we're going to experience a far more equal society, and the fair wording of my open letter supports the idea that men and women are equals. Advice for Men by Rose Dix. Hi, men. I'm writing this letter in hopes that it may act as the catalyst that spurs your awakening. Now, before you assume I'm about to attack, try not to jump to conclusions and let your hormones cloud your judgment. I don't hate you. I'm told that one of you actually contributed to my creation, but it's important for you to understand acceptable behaviour and recognise irreverence. Women are smart, bold, loving but firm. We're determined and astute. We're creative visionaries and leaders whose powers are limitless. Don't pity us. Don't underestimate us. We're at no disadvantage. It's not the same for you. You're men. You're automatically taken less seriously. Now, this letter contains information that's in your own interests, so try to retain as much of this as possible. If you need help translating the text into something slightly more rudimental, please locate your nearest female colleague. Let me put your mind at rest. There will come a point when you'll have to choose whether you'd like a career or a family. You can't have both. You won't manage. But don't fear this decision just because you're running out of time. Don't allow yourself to be pestered by the women at work who ask when you plan on starting a family, automatically assuming that you are able to have one. Just because it's naturally your primary goal doesn't mean you should feel any external pressure to announce your plans. It's what you've been working towards your whole life. And when it does happen, don't feel like a failure on the days when you break down. Your wives will pick up the pieces because they're better able to remain composed. However, don't be concerned if you decide to pursue your career and defy the very reason you were put on this earth, to give life. There's every chance that you'll progress up the career ladder and will make it to managing director, since every year companies are forced to award high-caliber positions to men to balance the overwhelming number of women in top-tier management. You may be lucky enough to benefit from positive discrimination. This way, at least they won't be basing your promotion on your aptitude or job performance. I appreciate that it must be hard not to let testosterone steer your decision-making. I'd hate to be subservient to my genetic makeup, but on the occasions where we catcall you, try to positively respond or you'll risk receiving a low fuckability rating. This is an age-old method of ranking and is one that should certainly govern the way you choose to present yourself. Remember, it's the opinions of your female cohorts that matter most, even if you didn't desire them in the first place. There may even be times when women explain things to you, assuming that you didn't already know. We only do this because usually we're right, especially when it comes to technology. It's important to recognize your own limits, and by standardizing you, we save time. Sweeping generalizations and gender-based stereotyping allow us to categorize men into specialisms we deem lesser, unimportant, or silly. So as women, we remain feeling unthreatened. When we require counsel regarding such disciplines as beauty, makeup, or fashion, please sit tight, because you're our first point of call. That's enough. It might never happen.
Chapter 7. The Future. If you're asking whether I'll love my biological baby more than your biological baby, the answer is yes. My impending future feels both daunting and immensely promising. It's also constantly happening. I keep worrying about the future, and then I wake up the next day and I'm in it. Life keeps occurring. I clean the bathrooms and they need to be re-cleaned. I clear out my inbox and the emails pile in again. The dog is in a constant cycle of being walked or getting ready for her next one, and I wake up and Rose is still there. Our immediate future is exhilarating, all-consuming, and exhausting. Right now, and for the foreseeable time being, we are in the process of buying and moving into our first house, writing a book, and working on another secret project, all while attempting to juggle our usual uploading schedule and retain just enough of a social life that our friends don't ditch us completely. Selfishly, everyone decided to be born during what is now our busiest time, and there's nothing that makes me feel guiltier than declining a birthday party invite from your bestie. But I'm certainly not complaining. You don't learn about the power of positivity and then just forget it all. All of the above is so exciting. The other day, Rose and I chose our first item of furniture for our new home, and I squealed with joy. I'm just so grateful to even be able to buy a house, especially in such a difficult climate. I'm in such a wonderful position. I enjoy my job, I love my wife, and tomorrow is the first day of the rest of our lives. So what's next for us?
The future. It's not tangible, it's not stable, but it's imminent, it's unavoidable, and the only thing that's certain about it is the fact that it's coming. Are we slaves to it, or are we the creators of our own path? Thinking about the future is bittersweet. On the one hand, I'm excited to turn into my father, with his loathing of new technology and an eagerness to quarrel. But on the other hand, the inevitability of collapsing onto my fall mat because no one responded to my bedside buzzer is dire, to say the least. I'm acutely aware that the longer I live, the less time I have left to disprove that E equals MC squared, or at least use it as my stage name. The older I get, the more I begin to question life's purpose and appreciate Reese Witherspoon's refusal to age by cloning herself to become immortal. Do I want to become a cartoon combo of facial paralysis and a rubber chicken beak? Or do I want to age with a little decorum? Well, I want the beak and strictly one facial expression. Does that mean I've succumbed to superficial societal values? Or do most people who oppose cosmetic anti-aging simply fail to see the multifunctionality the beak has to offer? Function 1. Lay your lips on your desk and you are your very own paperweight. Function 2. They're shock absorbent in the event of an air collision and buoyant in any open water that may follow. But despite the beak's organisation and life-saving potential, I'm yet to fully commit.
I once read an article that claimed your 30s were some of the best years of your life. The summary of this article was that, stereotypically, you tend to experience a lot in your 20s, which you eventually learn how to deal with, and so you end up in a much better situation in your 30s. The article listed points such as, you've developed your own sense of style by 30, you've become more accepting of yourself, and you've learned how to deal with irritating people at work. I agreed with a lot of the article. I've been through a lot, career-wise and in my personal life, that I've learned lessons from. I've adopted new skills and rules to help protect myself and to keep me calmer in the face of stress. I feel I am more accepting of myself. But the one thing I can't get on board with is aging. I just refuse to do it. I'm okay with the getting older part. That's inevitable. I enjoy a good birthday party, so I'm looking forward to the ones to come. But the physical aging upsets me. I just want to preserve my face, and it can't be impossible because Nicole Kidman has done it. I don't want anything invasive, just maybe some Botox to stave off the eventual facelift, and then later a full head transplant. Online, I've already discussed my strong desire to become a MILF, and then later in life, a GILF. It's a shallow goal, and I'm okay with that. I don't believe looks are everything, but perhaps I'm extra sensitive when it comes to my face. It's not that surprising, seeing as I film, edit, upload, and watch myself regularly. Also, I'm still scarred from the disaster that was my eyebrows circa 2011 to 2015. I don't like to talk about it. But seriously, I've reached a point in my life when I keep getting older. When did this start happening? Not only is it happening, but it's happening faster. I guess I just thought that it would never happen to me. I'm fairly certain that the next step that comes with the aging process is meant to be self-acceptance. But how can you accept something you are fundamentally against? The weekend being extended by an extra day? Now that's something I could accept.
Aging is something we all embrace differently. Some of us fear it, and some of us refuse point blank to accept it. Perhaps I'll let myself go, shielded by the smokescreen of political standing, adamant that I don't feel obligated to look a certain way to remain attractive. I shall happily embrace my Edinburgh Woolen Mill collection and will smell as interesting as beige looks, all in protest against society's perception of beauty. My breath won't necessarily suggest beauty comes from within, but that won't weaken my resolve. It might weaken other people's. Still, I'll wear my reversible fleece with pride, paired with an ill-matching tunic, while storing the rest of my argument in the jowl pouches I choose not to surgically correct. Surely I'll be happy, knowing I never felt forced into filling my face with lies by creating cheeks where cheeks never were. Or perhaps not. Aging doesn't bother me so much when I think about Rosie getting old and gross with me. I know exactly the kind of woman she wants to be. Oversized faux fur coat, Hunter Wellington's, cashmere scarf, take no shit attitude in a car playing hits from the 90s and parked on double yellow lines. I always imagined I'd end up growing old in my art studio, with hair that resembled a small creature's habitat and oil paint still wet on my trousers. I'd be concentrating on my landscapes, have only one ear, because copying the greats is the ultimate form of flattery, and I imagine that Rosie's volume is only going to get louder. So reducing my hearing by 50% should balance the scale. I'll want to pretend like I give a shit about potted plants and will even grow my own vegetables to cover in varnish and stick to thin air for my contemporary conceptual period. I can't wait to journal my later years to pass on to my estranged children or a carer. I imagine it'll read something like this. The 15th of June, 2058. I think Julio is after my fortune. I suspect he thinks that if he prunes the hawthorn, he's entitled to a bonus, but I specifically told him to water the begonias and leave the hedges as they were, perfectly parallel. Well, I woke up again today, which was a surprise. I'm almost certain it's my 70th birthday. I lost track after my 30th. The last 40 years have been somewhat of a blur. That could be my tequila breakfasts, or the macular degeneration I inherited from my grandfather. Either way, times have certainly changed. Since the War of 2020, when the uprising of Cardassia left men politically powerless, the all-female administration split the men into 12 districts, from which a select few must fight to the death in a battle for equal pay and zero harassment. It's all live-streamed, of course, for the entertainment of the capital, and is interactive to those with a subscription. It's on this afternoon, in fact, so I look forward to a little birthday bloodshed with a sherry. We haven't heard from Arabella since she told us she'd fallen in love with a man. Disappointing. But as a mother, you have to think of their happiness first. I suspect she's living it up somewhere in Marbella, in one of those straight, friendly bars they seem to congregate in. She tells me it's not a choice, and that she was born that way. But she's young and impressionable, and certainly not to be taken seriously. We had a disagreement, and off she fled after an overdramatic exchange of words, which caused tension between Rosie and me. I, of course, seem to be the bad cop, because I'm at the age when I do Sudoku and speak my mind. I was hoping to receive a card this morning, but Herbert hasn't brought me my mail, so he's fired. It's been a beautifully hot summer. All the polar ice caps have now melted, and the rise in sea levels have destroyed problematic countries like Switzerland. Rosie and I have reserved our spot on Cloud 9 with Travel Afterlife, and I hear my mother's already reserved a sun lounger up there, before the Germans could put their towels on them. Everything is pretty idyllic. The sun is shining, the YouTube algorithm is faultless, and I think I can smell Rosie preparing expunged avocado on toast. I'd settle for smashed, but it is my birthday after all. Days like these make me miss bacon, but once veganism became religious doctrine, it was harder to argue with. Rosie's aged badly. I haven't said anything, because it's not constructive, and would probably upset her. We hit 35, and she just gave up. Not through choice. Her seventh father left, and it was all downhill from there. Fortunately, we found out he'd been selected for battle from District 10, and he didn't make it, which gave her closure. We're still going strong. Our upload schedule isn't what it once was, but we're still making videos for the 9 who watch. Technology certainly has developed since the days of Snapchat. President Blue Ivy Carter shushed that right up. When Branson was forced to sign his empire over to Kate Winslet, I think we were all skeptical about high-speed Virgin cruises of the North Atlantic, but the infrastructure had changed since 1912. It turned out to be exactly the break Rosie and I needed to reconnect. Not to each other, but to the internet. That summer, our BT router was playing up, and all the male technicians were on strike demanding a close in the gender pay gap. The administration took care of them, of course, but it was tremendously inconvenient. If there's anything I've learned in life, it's that the future is unpredictable. Look at Herbert. He had a job this morning and now he doesn't. If there's one thing I'll pass on to my alienated daughter, it's to appreciate every moment. Tomorrow, you might wake up dead. Or in her case, heterosexual. So savor the good times.
Motherhood. It's something I simultaneously crave and am repulsed by. I come from a big family, and the idea of an empty house terrifies me. Ditto the idea of spending every waking hour worrying about a miniature person. Rose and I do both see ourselves with children in the future, but, naturally, we have doubts, worries, and questions. Questions like, does it go back to normal after the birth? And, will my sex life be unaffected after pushing a human child out of my most precious area? I'm not going to lie, the actual birth part is a huge fear factor in the whole process. Rose has a tilted pelvis and I have a squeamish nature and an overactive imagination. I've heard horror stories. I'd rather not be part of one. We're not against the idea of adopting in the slightest. The concept of gaining a child pain-free and possibly helping to change someone's life for the better more than excites me. But having a child naturally would mean I had a tiny me to live vicariously through when I'm older and a has-been. The Spawn genes are strong, and having a baby that would potentially look and act like me is a self-indulgent scenario I would like very much. The problem with being in a same-sex relationship and wanting to have a child is that we can't just have a happy accident. So Rose and I do feel the pressure to make sure everything is perfect before we start the baby-making process. We set ourselves a rule that we would own a house before we started on whatever method we chose to have a baby. Well, we've bought the house. Now I wish we could buy more time.
I have so many questions about the future and the person I'm going to turn out to be. Should I have children for selfish reasons? Because I'm worried I'll have no one to look after me when I'm old? Yes. But the truth is, that doesn't really matter. There's no guarantee your children will like you enough to stick around. And chances are, you'll end up being looked after by one of the many Reese Witherspoons anyway, so why worry? It's a question that often preys on my mind. Not Reese's entrepreneurial defiance of mortality, but the decision to have children. There are so many benefits to having a baby. YouTube views, brand deals, self-importance, a Range Rover, exaggerated exasperation, and opportunistic baby entitlement. But those aren't all the blessings children bring. You have the power to name another human being something entirely ostentatious, like Arrow or Flundermina, and egotistical baby privilege gives you a free pass to forget your manners. But until I become a yummy mummy, with all the credentials that qualify me for the status, I'll openly say that I hate them. My experience of Hertfordshire mummies has been both inspiring and offensive. Inspiring in the sense that they've inspired me to believe their time is more precious than mine, and offensive in the sense that that offends me. In some respects, I admire their matriarchal ubiquity. Their omnipresence and their ability to juggle their lives by executing the school run with military precision is impressive. But don't expect me to step aside to make room for your pram like it's your right. It's the life you chose. Yes, my dog ferociously barks at children. Is that reason to assume she's dangerous? Probably, but what's more dangerous than an obnoxious child, with the small exception of natural disasters and a virus pandemic? Their entitlement is beyond anything else I've experienced, and yummies are seemingly unavoidable. Whether they're stay-at-home yummies, work-from-home yummies, or full-time employment yummies, I'm done with the lot of them. Until I unashamedly become one. I recall a time I was waiting in line at the post office. I approached the window and asked which postal class would guarantee my item to arrive on time. A simple question with a straightforward answer. As the staff member explained what I needed, a yummy mummy who I could hear breathing directly behind me interrupted my conversation with, "Yeah, can I post my item while you're busy making all these decisions?" I was triggered. Where did she get off thinking her time was the most valuable item in the post office? I turned around, shocked that anyone had such little patience, and angered by her rudeness. "Decisions? I'm being served. It looks like you'll have to wait your turn." She spat, hissed, and grabbed her daughter's arm and dragged her out the shop, mumbling something I couldn't quite hear as she left. But I made sure she heard me as I announced loudly how rude she was, appearing unbothered by her frustration and far less emotional than she was. A delicious serpent strike, if I do say so myself. What I wanted to ask her, had I more time, was why the big rush? Had she not time managed efficiently? Was her husband not supportive enough? Or was it all just getting a bit too much for her? Unforgivably sexist, but I know it would have angered the beast.
I've heard parents get extremely irritated when people compare having pets to having children. Why? If anything, children are 10 times easier. You don't typically have to worry about them biting people, and you can drop them off at school and leave them there. When we first got Wilma, our spoiled West Highland Terrier with attitude problems, she used to wake up in the night every 2 hours. We would get up and comfort her, feed her, and clean up her mess. I don't see how that is in any way different to having a child. And children won't chew through your internet cables or the stems of your brand new high heels. Because we typically work from home, we figured we would be the best pet owners, because we wouldn't be leaving Wilma alone and unstimulated for hours every day. What it actually meant was that every time she barked, we were there to give her exactly what she wanted. And so she developed into the most demanding, manipulative dog you've ever met. My nightmare is raising a child I don't like. Nobody talks about stuff like that. Why not? But I do dream of Christmas with children and watching them experience joy. Taking them to Disneyland, choosing their cute baby outfits to match my adult ensemble, brushing their hair before school, reading them books, cuddling them, telling them how much I love them. I do think I have a huge maternal instinct just waiting inside of me. I don't know any lesbian parents, probably because they all live in Brighton, but Rose and I have spoken to a few. One of our fears was that if we had children, they would be considered different due to them having two mummies. But one lesbian mum assured me that it had actually given her children street cred. It made them cool to come from a modern family. And if there's one thing any mother wishes for her child, it's that they're cool. That'll take them way further than initiative, creativity, passion, or academic prowess.
I don't know what kind of mother I'll be. Half of me wants to believe I'll be laid back and liberal, but deep down, I know I'm going to force upon them whatever I think is best, like higher education and sun cream. And they've met their match if they think I'll respond emotionally to any teenage backchat. I'll be unbeatable. They'll hate me for it at first, but I'll soon become their inspiration. I can't imagine there would be much I wasn't prepared for. I don't mean in terms of sleepless nights and nappy changing. I'm absolutely not prepared for that. I mean in terms of emotional distress. Mum, I think I'm gay. Yes, probably. You were raised by two women. Mum, I don't feel comfortable in this body. Likely. Studies prove a balanced child needs to be raised by both a mother and a father. Mum, I'm being bullied. Have you tried being something other than yourself? Mum, Timothy Dalton was the best Bond. Get the fuck out. See? Totally prepared. However, that does raise the issue of hurting when your children are hurt. When my dog has an ear infection, I cry and bargain with the powers that be to remove the suffering in exchange for my own. If my child was getting picked on, I'd be fully prepared to lose every inch of restraint and embrace the opportunity to defend them by systematically crushing the offenders, bypassing other parents and teachers, with my own brand of anti-bullying vigilantism. I have a zero-tolerance policy when it comes to someone harming the people I love. It's my way or the highway. And by highway, I mean the lawful, less effective route.
Here's another fear. What if they like one mummy more than the other? Luckily, I have an advantage here. I'm not as crazy as Rose is about doing the washing up or the hoovering. I am 100% up for making a mess, and I love food that tastes good and is bad for you. Add to that my passion for children's films, and I think I'm onto a winner, at least in the early stages of a kid's life. I will be totally unhelpful when it comes to maths homework, but hopefully I can get them into some good music. Despite not yet being a parent myself, I still love to criticize others' parenting skills. And before you get mad, don't worry. I may dish it out, but I can take it too. I'm eagerly anticipating the Schoolgate drama. I have some superficial aims. To be a hot mum is one of them. I imagine turning up early, outfit on fleek, homemade cake for the school bake sale, matching my outfit to my daughter's, whose name is Paris. The reality is that sometimes on a day off, I don't even bother to wash. I have gone days in a row without brushing my hair, mostly when all I'm doing is sitting and editing, interrupted only by a few dog walks and dinner. No, I don't do my hair for the dog walk or for dinner. So my glamorous motherhood dreams are just that, dreams. I've been told that no amount of research and anticipation can prepare you for the actual reality that is motherhood. But I like to think I've watched enough Mummy Day in the Life YouTube videos to know better. One exceptional advantage is that Rose and I are at home most days, whereas for most couples, one parent is alone while the other goes out to work. We're very, very lucky that there would be two of us on hand, or at least one of us while the other makes the coffee. But do we actually want children right now? There was a time when I felt seriously broody, so broody that Rose was genuinely terrified. We'd always said that we wanted children in our future, and we decided that when we bought a house, we would start exploring our options. Now that our house purchase has gone through, we aren't so sure. The deadline keeps getting pushed back. We've started thinking that we should enjoy our new house for a bit before we bring anyone else into it.
The pressure to have children is unreal. Pressure from every angle. Motherhood doesn't come naturally to some. And as difficult as it might be to believe, it's not every woman's desire to become a parent. I already resent the idea of carrying something around for 9 months when I've been carrying my emotional baggage around for 30 years. I've eaten for two throughout my 20s, and the thought of total responsibility for another life alarms me like Piers Brosnan alarmed the nation with his underwhelming singing ability. No one ever seems to talk about the possibility that you won't like your child. Don't get me wrong, I believe in the ability to love unconditionally, but on several conditions. One, don't take me for granted. And two, don't assume I'll carry you financially just because I carried you physically. Perhaps you've picked up on my negative tone towards parenthood, but maybe that's just because I've suddenly felt the pressure to make a decision. I was never one to play with dolls. I had Puppy in my pocket, Scale X Trick, the complete Playmobil zoo set, and the Playmobil ambulance in case there was an incident in the tiger enclosure. Whenever I played by myself, I was never a mother. I was a father, a lion, or the president from Independence Day. I never aspired to have children. Having a family was never something I gave much thought to. I'm wondering whether my maternal instinct will naturally kick in as I get older. But society seems to be trying to kick it in for me. So it's not so much a natural instinct as it is an expected one. And it doesn't just happen to me. The amount of times I've heard tales of men asking women when they plan on having a child, assuming firstly that they are able to have one and secondly that it's something that they want and should prioritise because time is running out. Rude. Presumptuous and rude. There seems to be disapproval and bemusement directed at women who choose to focus on their careers rather than their families. It puzzles people, and as much as I wish I could deflect the pressure of these assumptions, instead, I soak it up and spiral into a frenzy of thinking maybe I want to put myself first for now and freeze my eggs for later. If the worst comes to the worst, I'll place a bid on one of the Jolie Pitts. But until that's been legalised, I'm forced to make a decision on the right side of the law.
Despite how forward-thinking our society is becoming, I do still feel that there is an unspoken pressure to have children by a certain time. And I don't want to have a baby for the wrong reasons. Rose and I have surprised ourselves by deciding that there is a possibility that we will become mothers much later in our lives. Now, I've learned that life has a way of surprising you. I didn't plan a future with a wife and a shared business, it just happened that way, and I'm more than pleasantly surprised. I didn't picture being an old parent, but that might happen too. Rose and I have discussed putting off the family expansion process for a while, and there are many good reasons to do so. Being frank, I'm currently in therapy, and it would probably be a good idea not to need therapy just before putting my body through a huge hormonal change followed by a total life shift that involves an all-consuming job of protecting and caring for a life that's not my own. Also, I don't know if we're ready just yet. Add to that, our career is doing well, and that there are still things I haven't done that I would like to do before settling down to have children. But you never know what will happen. Rose and I do want children, and I am feeling a little broody reading this.
While visiting an animal sanctuary in Costa Rica, I learned about a particular breed of butterfly that lives for just 3 weeks before it dies. In that time, their sole purpose is to reproduce and continue the cycle of creating life, quickly followed by death. It really made me think. None of those butterflies had computer skills. None had explored their creative potential. None had a business model. I'm not saying they'd be able to get a business off the ground in 3 weeks, but it made me think. What's the point? Surely there's more to life than creating life. But maybe I'm approaching this wrong. Some say that you live your second life through your children. I have to admit, the idea of making Christmas magical for my babies in a world that can often seem dark brings me so much joy. And for me, it doesn't matter whether or not I decide to have one naturally or whether we adopt. I believe that my children will always be my children, no matter how they're brought to me. Children are a gift. Unfortunately, they don't come with a gift receipt for those just-in-case moments, but we can look beyond that and see them as miracles. That's really all I have to say about the prospect of motherhood. I look forward to doing everything wrong.
How would we have children? So, how would we actually have children? We've narrowed down some of our options. Number one, same sperm, two pregnancies. This was originally our first choice. This way, we would each get to be a biological parent, and by using the same sperm, our children would be half-siblings. But there are issues with this method. What if one of us can't get pregnant, resulting in only one of us becoming a biological mother? What if one of us has twins and we don't want any more children? What if we freak out when we find out where babies come from? Number two, egg swap. I'm going to be honest, I'm not keen on this idea, even though I've seen couples do it successfully. This is when, for example, Rose would give me her fertilized egg and I would carry and birth the baby. It means that, on a technical level, we are both the child's biological mother. But things can go wrong. What if my body rejects Rose's egg? It's also extremely expensive. I understand why people do it. I'm just not sure it's for me. Number three, freezing our eggs. I feel so sci-fi when I consider this option. I love the idea. Freezing them now so I still have the option to conceive a lot later in life. But it's expensive, and it doesn't guarantee anything, as the eggs have to survive the freezing process. Fertility on ice? Now there's a cocktail that's not virgin. Number four, adoption. Adoption is looking to be the likeliest of all options, but I also know that I'm a Gemini with a decision-making problem. The problem is, I can never decide. There are so many pros and cons to this route, but it's definitely something Rose and I would like to investigate further. Number five, using a surrogate. You know what they say, why do something yourself when you can pay someone else to do it for you? I'm just kidding. Look, I totally get why a surrogate is necessary in certain situations. But as far as we're aware, we're both capable of conceiving and birthing a child, so why would I make someone else do it if I'm not even sure I want to? Saying that, Kim Kardashian has made it totally trendy now, so why not? Parenting Troubleshooting by Rose and Rosie. All your parenting fears and concerns answered. How do you know when it's hungry?
Duh, just ask it.
How should you react if your child tells you they hate you?
Take away their bed and give them a real reason to hate you.
What do you suggest if one child starts picking on the other?
Place a bet.
What if you like one child more than the other?
Having more than one child is a fantastic way to spend extra time relaxing. Send your least favourite to do your daily tasks for you and maximise your binge watching.
What should you do if you drop your child?
What Britney did. Nothing. Instead, focus your attention on your comeback album. Millions of dollars tend to soften the blows that any lack of love or care during infancy might have inflicted. Money will fix everything, including superficial wounds, if applied correctly.
What should you do if you suspect your child of bullying other children at school?
Tell them they inherited their aggression from their father.
Do I need to sterilize bottles and pacifiers after every single use?
No. Forget what those overly cautious nurses said at antenatal class. I've let my dog chew on a pacifier plenty of times before giving it back to the child who dropped it, and it's never been a problem. Your child will be fine. If anything, dirt will boost their immune system.
I can't get my child to latch on when breastfeeding, and I'm close to giving up. Does this make me a bad parent?
Yes. Tell me, did you plan on raising a quitter?
What constitutes sleeping through the night, and will it ever happen?
Listen, if you can't recognise when your own baby is sleeping through the night, you were never cut out to be a parent. Please send it back immediately.
Is green poop normal?
Not if it's yours. Back away from the juicer.
My toddler throws tantrums in public.
Here's the thing. Children learn by watching. So who's really to blame?
30 Things to Do Before You're 30 by Rosie Sporton. From a 20-something who already knows everything. Number 1. Go on a Britney Spears-esque road trip across America with your girlfriends, crossroads style. Figure out if you are in fact still a girl or simply not yet a woman. Find yourself, and along the way, find the perfect trilby to complement all your other perfect features. Cheat on Justin Timberlake. Think about having children later on, and then dropping them. Number 2. Take a risk. This could be something as simple as marrying Kevin Federline, or as deep as pitching a TV series set in a dystopian yet historic Western future with robotic hookers and a self-playing piano. Maybe create yet another TV streaming service, despite the serious competition. Number 3. Get a tattoo. Why not? Why merely admire the art in various galleries when you could permanently attach it to your own skin and get bored of it quicker? The possibilities are endless. Number 4. Bungee jump. Why sit at home and wait for death when you could get out there and carpe diem yourself? Number 5. Start a collection. I'm already way ahead of the game. I've been collecting various size hearts and bogeys since the late 90s. Sometimes Rose collects her toenails in a little pile on her bedside table. It's extremely well organized. Number 6. Eat really expensive food, because I'm told rich people stuff is better. Why burn your money when you could eat it? Count calories rather than pounds. Wait a second. Number 7. Go and watch some kind of sport live, even if you aren't interested, just so you can take a selfie and make a splash online in a desperate bid to appear cool and retain your cultural relevance. Number 8. Pee in all 22 of the world's oceans. The world is your massive, gross-tasting oyster. Number 9. Learn a new language or, in my case, make up your own to prevent people from reading your diary. Then, forget how to read it and spend the rest of your days trying to interpret your chicken school entry about that murder mystery party so you can finally have closure that it wasn't you. Number 10. Invest all your savings into stocks that will never plummet, like lip filler buoyancy aids, the latest mode of time travel, or the male contraceptive pill. Number 11. Similar to number 10, and also to number 2, take a risk and invest your life savings into a startup business with your best friend. Nothing could go wrong. Number 12. Sleep with your straight best friend, regardless of your own sexuality. The awkwardness will either bring you closer or cull a dead-end friendship. Win-win. Number 13. Make mistakes that subsequently become regrets. This will help you later in life if you feel like becoming a scarred superhero with a backstory or even a misunderstood and relatable villain that just went too far down the wrong path. This will also help you with wearing a leather jacket, brooding, drinking at a bar alone, drinking whiskey neat without wincing, sitting in the dark, staying awake at night, closing yourself off from any form of relationship, and distancing yourself from others. Number 14. Waste your spare time coming up with the perfect retorts to all the friends you argued with circa 2005 onwards. Or even better, during your school years. This will help your life pass by quicker without your having to be productive or achieving anything apart from bitterness and resentment. Ladies, those grudges won't hold themselves. Number 15. Become a Hollywood icon, but peak too soon. That way you can spend the rest of your life drinking and retelling the same stories from 40 years ago on one of your endless stints on reality television. Overcome your addiction and write your fourth memoir. Marry Jerry Halliwell. Number 16. Test your limits and personal boundaries and do something that scares you. This could push your fear into a fully fledged phobia, leading you to seek therapy. Have an affair with your hot older therapist who just so happens to be questioning her sexuality. Discover she's been breaking the codes of conduct by stalking her patients and cut off the relationship. Realize that one time you tested your fear 2 years ago has now come full circle and that you're stronger because of it. Create a TV series about your ex-therapist's life that later gets cancelled. Realize you are completely healed. Number 17. Improve your wine knowledge so you can become a wine cunt. Number 18. Get to know your family history so you can discover the shocking secret that the first dad who left was actually not your real dad at all. But in an unexpected twist of events and due to sheer mathematical chance, you uncover that your biological father was in fact the seventh father to leave. Fascinating. Number 19. Find your true purpose. Is it acting? Yoga? Adopting rescue dogs or working for charities abroad? Fuck your true purpose and marry a prince. Number 20. Become the inventor of something iconic. For example, after my career on YouTube ends, I plan to become a full-time backseat driver, something me and my friend just started up. It's when people hire you to correct them when they are driving just fine. Requirements are weak eyesight and a dogmatic attitude. Number 21. Make discoveries about yourself and the rest of the world. For example, discover a new continent. Number 22. If you can't already, learn to speak Spanish. It's estimated that more than 470 million people speak Spanish as a native language. But if you want something even more useful, learn how to speak a much less common language, like Nigerian, which is spoken exclusively by 4 people in Nigeria. This will give you the ability to always say exactly what's on your mind with the minimum chance of offending anyone. Get a friend to learn it with you so you can bitch about the rest of the world freely. Number 23. Take a spontaneous trip alone to find yourself. Go to the airport with nothing but your passport and get the next flight to anywhere. Forget clothes. You can buy them at your destination, even though you won't be prepared by having the correct currency or a suitcase to put them in. I promise this will be the least stressful trip you'll ever make. Attempt to document your journey despite not having a camera. Don't tell anyone where you are or what you're doing, but most of all, have fun. Number 24. Move to a new city. Change your name. Become someone else. Realize you've become your mother. Number 25. Go to Las Vegas and learn how to gamble. What better way to spend your money than on a game of chance? Lose money but gain an addiction to gambling. Gamble with your future. Congratulate yourself. You are now officially a risk taker. Number 26. Go skinny dipping. What's more freeing than nudity in public places? One time, I was sunbathing topless and noticed an old man I didn't know standing very near to me watching. New experiences are fun. Number 27. Show the world your creativity. Release an album or write a book. It must be easy, or else the YouTubers wouldn't be doing it. Number 28. Go on a silent retreat. Have conversations. Meet new people. Number 29. Meet your idol. Find a way. Laws are there to be broken. Number 30. And finally, fail spectacularly at something, mope around for a bit, and then try again and again until you hit success, all while listening to the same backing track. This provides the perfect cinematic montage of your character development if you ever become famous and need to make a blockbuster hit about your life.
My ambitions for the future often change. Not that I'm flighty with fleeting goals, but with each day, I seem to reevaluate what's important to me. Perhaps that's just what happens as you grow. The things that used to feel important shift and seem less significant. When I was younger, I couldn't wait to be older. All the independence that would come with adulthood, the opportunity to become someone, the cars and the women that would inevitably accompany a quarter life or midlife crisis. It all seems so hopeful. Now, my ideal future is one when I can spend as much time with my family as possible. I really love my mum and dad, and the thought of losing them frightens me more than anything. More than clowns. More than the outcome of Running with Scissors. More than a Stephanie Meyer cameo. It genuinely keeps me awake at night, and a small part of me even believes there's something I can do to stop it from happening. Which would be ridiculous if I weren't such a talented problem solver with access to higher beings. Losing my parents will be an event in my life that I'll never feel ready for, yet I constantly try to accept. Unlike my younger self, now, when I think about my goals for the future, I think about the quality of my relationships. I want to know everything there is to know about my parents, so that I can achieve a true sense of closeness before they ascend to the afterlife and argue about the draft.